patient number 17620, James Watts, Reel 8.
Mr. Watts, Reel 8. Before you left to go abroad, Mr. Watts, were you given medicals?
Oh, yes.
And inoculations?
Yes. No, that was a regular feature. Every so often, you know, at least once a year you would get TAB, tetox, typhus, inoculations. Especially tetanus. Because, you see, we were hoping to be wounded up on the moors here when we were demonstrating for the School of Infantry.
Were there any difficulties with inoculations? Some side effects?
Well, the first thing that happened was when I joined the Durhams in Bransmith, and we got the full set of inoculations there, etc. And some of the lads reacted very alarmingly. I mean, they looked as if they were in a fever. And I was laughing at them because I didn't have any effects whatsoever. So I went to the Salvation Army and I had some pies and peas. And when I came out at 9 o'clock, I hadn't gone very far, and I felt a bit funny. And next thing I knew, I was lying on my bunk. Apparently I'd fainted, and the picket that wandered in the barracks had found me in among the cabbages. It had quite an effect on me on that, and I was always wary after that. But on the whole, inoculations didn't affect me, didn't upset me at all.
And obviously, the inoculations you got for Africa again would have little effect upon you personally.
Yeah, no, that's true. But with other chaps, it did knock them. It laid them low. You know, it had different effects on different people. That's obvious.
Prior to landing in Africa, were you prepared for example, the change in country, people, climate,
not really.
Customs and so forth?
No, I don't think we had any idea. Going across on the boat, of course, we came in contact with the Americans. I always remember the Americans playing their craps, you know, the old dice. And there was a pile of dollar bills in the middle of a khaki blanket, about three, and the pile was about 3 foot high. And and one of them won. He's given it all away. But no, we didn't have much to do with what was going to happen to us when we got there. What did happen when we got off the boat was a lot of old sweat shouting to us to get our knees brown, because we had huge topies and long shorts on. We must have looked a right rabble getting off that boat in Philville. Now, we were there just 5 days.
And was this a tented camp that you were in?
Yes, yes. Makeshift.
Problems with mosquitoes or flies of that kind of nature?
Well, I think I used to let mosquitoes bite me, I think, and they just went away and died. I don't know why, but mosquitoes, malaria didn't bother me, but I did take the usual precautions. We took Mepocrin, little yellow tablets, and they put it on, balanced it on the side of your plate when you got your dinner or your mess tin. And if it fell in, why, it was bitter as gall, you know. It was terrible. And we had Mepocrin, an ointment of sort we could rub on. But I think the main thing was to make sure that your knees were covered and your arms, your sleeves were rolled down. That was an order, more or less. At twilight, you put your sleeves down. We had our mosquito nets. I always used mine.
Were you checked to make ensure that you had took your Mepocrin tablets?
No, not really. But I think we were self-dependent on things like that. You had to take the precautions, and if you didn't, well, that was your lookout. Because I always remember them telling us about, you know, if you stay out in the sun, you're going to get sunburned. If you can't carry your pack, you'll be out of action, and if you're out of action, you don't get paid. So we never got sunburned. I used to crawl under a tree whenever I got the chance, you know. Watch the natives. That was an that was an order, more or less. Watch what the natives do, you know, and, like old Noel Coward. Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the noonday sun.
Must have been difficult for fair-skinned people amongst burn almost at the touch of the sun.
Well, some of the lads who were out there that we became, you know, that we joined up with, became friends with, some of them were like Negroes, though, very, very black. And a lot had desert sores, which they'd had for a year or two, couldn't get rid of.
Did the Mepocrine have side effects?
Not that I know of.
You didn't change colour or yellowy or whatever?
No, I didn't have anything like that. When I went out, I was exceptionally fit. I was getting a bit heavier, a bit taller. I was certainly very active, but it wasn't long in abroad that I went down with dysentery.
What was the typical soldier's approach towards the natives when you first landed?
Didn't see them. Of course, we landed in Tunisia. Didn't come in contact with them. There was one or two who used to come round trying to sell things, but I never went into in any of the establishments, the towns, etc. I never bothered doing that. I just stayed around the river and went for a swim in the Mediterranean.
And you did mention there were accidents.
Yeah, a number of lads were drowned.
Was this just through lack of experience of the conditions in the water?
Completely, because you don't imagine that people can be in difficulties who are more or less within arm stretch. You know, at a distance of about 5 yards off where the water is lapping the beach, there's such an undertow that it pulls you straight down and you find yourself swimming backwards. And a lot of lads, even good swimmers. But I did fish one out and sadly he died in May. No power.
And did you have military funerals for these people? Where you,
no,
yourself?
Not that I don't know what happened. Bodies were things which I learned later, but you came across and you just left them.
The 5 days that you were there, what were you doing? Other than the swimming piece that we just talked about.
Well, resting up and getting organised, and I think it was more or less a transit camp. I mean, within 5 days we were gone. We went to Sicily. And we had gone to Sicily where the war had just ended about a fortnight earlier. And the 50th and the 51st divisions were there. And we thought we were destined for the 50 div. But that didn't materialise because they were coming home and we just had gone out, of course.
What date was this?
That would be, we left, actually we departed for Africa 54 years ago on the 10th of August. We arrived on the 21st of August in Africa, and I think around about the 27th or 28th of August we went to Sicily. So I was in Sicily before the end of August.
Where did you land in Sicily?
Augusta, just south of Catania.
And right up to now, you still didn't know where you were going or where
would
you join?
No, we were dumped on a hillside, told to just go up in between those rows. We didn't know what the rows were because it was dark. And we went up through these rows and we stuck our mosquito nets up and just went to sleep. When we woke up, we were sleeping in a vineyard. And some of the lads ate the grapes and they were sick. They had stomach aches, etc. I didn't. I just had a taste, and I said, "Oh, they weren't fit to eat." So I didn't. I left them. And then for about a fortnight, we lived in complete chaos.
And again, was this intense?
No. On the
open to the sky.
Open to the sky. Yes, al fresco. The whole of the Sicilian War was over. You see, and preparations were already in in hand for the invasion of Italy. That was obvious. So that they were drafting us in to reinforce those battalions that had been depleted in the war in Sicily. And that included the 78th Division, of course, which was the division I eventually joined. But we were three sergeants. We didn't have any messing facilities. There were no latrines, no heating houses, no nothing. All you did, you would go and collect a compo box of rations, which is 14 days' rations for two men. And we used to just eat from those, really, to look after ourselves. Just sleep on the top. Water came up by a bowser. You know, the little water tank would come up and we would get our water. But I got a very big vase. It's called a chatty. It's about 4 foot high. And I filled it half full of water. And that was my bath. That's a nice bath in there. And but other than that, the facilities were bad, and the flies and the hornets. But the thing which worried me the most was that so many soldiers seemed to be oblivious to the health memoranda for soldiers, which we got when we joined the army. It's a well-known fact, if you haven't a toilet, well, your toilet becomes 200 yards downwind and you take a shovel. Well, that wasn't going on, and after about 5 days living in those conditions, I had severe diarrhoea and sickness at the same time, which I now know is dysentery. And that debilitated me very, very quickly.
So it must have been a poorly inspected area. There
was no facilities at all, you see. And then we were, for about a week or so, we went from Augusta up to Syracuse. We went halfway up to a place called Taormina, which was a very beautiful little place, then down to Catania, and then back down to Syracuse. And this went on for about 2 to 3 weeks, you know. And then eventually we sailed off and went to Taranto in the tour of Italy.
You'll be seeing signs of the fighting in Sicily.
Yes, we went over we were carried over the Primosolo Bridge. And I remember that quite clearly. A young lad out of the RASC looked at us and he saw our DLI cap badge. And he said, "This is where your lad," he says, "fought a very, very hard battle." And he said, "You must be very, very proud of them." But we weren't aware of that. You know, we weren't aware of the battle, you see. We'd arrived after it. But it was obvious that there'd been one hell of a scrap there.
What was your thinking? I mean, each day, in effect, you're getting closer to danger, aren't you?
Well, one of the aspects of my training in England was that I was well aware of artillery fire. Artillery fire, machine gun fire, and small arms in general. So that we were bombed once or twice with my German aircraft, but they became almost extinct after that.
Whilst you were in Sicily?
Yes, we hardly ever saw the German Air Force after that. I think I can recollect about five occasions where German fighters would come over. And one night, they bombed us when we were at a casino. But other than that, we didn't have much bother with the German Air Force.
So, as I say, you were obviously moving closer to the fact that you yourselves would be in action.
Yes.
Were you looking forward to it?
Well,
a bit afraid, or what?
Well, I remember that, for me personally, and I know for one of my other pals, there was a great disappointment that we weren't going to our battalion.
You'd been told you weren't going at this point,
hadn't you? Well, we knew. We knew that the 50th Div were going home, because there was a brigade of Durham Light Infantry in the 50th Div, and we didn't expect to go back home. I mean, we just had come out. So when we landed at Taranto, we knew we were heading up into the front line. We were going to go at the front line as reinforcements. But we weren't fully aware of the formations, which I later found consisted, the 8th Army consisted of the 78th Division and the Canadians and an Indian Division, and that was the 8th Army. You see, it was a very minor role. So that after about 3 or 4 weeks in the bottom of, well, maybe 5 or 6 weeks, because we didn't reach the Lancashire Fusiliers until the 20th of October. So that's when we knew that we were going to go to the Lancashire Fusiliers. They had come out of a terrible battle at Termoli on the east coast of Italy, and we arrived just after about 11 o'clock at night.
Just before we come to that, the number of weeks that you were in the Toe of Italy, Taranto, yes. I think you said, what were you doing down there?
In transit camps.
Little to do,
leapfrogging, getting closer to the front.
And you kept moving.
That's right, and they were just moving us up, because it must have been quite a job when you weighed up, you know. The lads had been in battle, there had been quite a lot of casualties. I think there was a terrific shortage of platoon commanders, lieutenants. And, of course, we were getting sorted out, and as it was, I probably ended up with one of the best battalions in the British Army. Very good battalion.
What were your own personal feelings when you knew you were definitely not going to the Durhams whom you joined, yes, and into another regiment?
I was disappointed. I was disappointed. And remember that when you join frontline troops, they live a different life to other troops. You've got to get to know them, and they're suspicious of you. There were three young soldiers, very young soldiers, arriving with a frontline battalion who had been battling from Africa through Sicily and through this part of Italy with distinction. And we're moving in on their territory. So we all had to revert to corporal. So after we were examined by the battalion medical officer, 11 o'clock at night, he gave us our injections, tetanus, etc., boosted them, and we were taken away by a lance corporal to our respective platoons. And when we arrived at the spot, he says, "Well, this is where we are." He says, "We're about 3 miles away from the enemy." He says, "He's pretty quiet at the moment. I don't think we have worried about it. So I'll just bed down here for the night." He says, "You can dig a slit trench if you like, but I don't think you don't need to." So we just broke it down and went to sleep. And then on the morning, we went and had our porridge and our breakfast, and we were Lancashire Fusiliers.
How did the veterans of the unit you were going to join, how did they show this suspicion? How did it come out? Those initial meetings, the very
I don't think they were suspicious of us. You know, there's obviously there was some that who resented us. But
as far as they were concerned, you weren't Lancashire men, were you?
No, but having said that, we quickly found out there was a lot of Durham lads in the Lancashire Fusiliers who had joined the Lancashire Fusiliers, you know, been posted, earlier on, because they were a bit older than what we were, you see. But
but there was awareness.
That's right. But there were a good crowd, and you soon merge, because the camaraderie between frontline soldiers is fantastic. There's a love there, which you don't find even brotherly love or even married love or fatherly love. But the love of a comrade, it's a strange experience, and you never forget them. Someone's looking after your back, you know. The lad who led me away to where I had to go was actually my lance corporal, and I took charge of the section. I mean, there's only seven of us. One was ex-14th Battalion Durham Light Infantry, who had been posted. They were all from different parts of the... One was a southerner, two or three were from Lancashire, you know.
Have these men seen action?
Not much.
But the point I was going to make was, here you are a corporal, sergeant, but come down to corporal out of England, knees not brown, you might say, and you'd taken in to command a section of people who'd done the fighting. Yeah. This itself must have been a difficult situation.
Well, this lad, lad called Umpleby, actually, Jack Umpleby, I couldn't have picked a better lad if I'd been asked to choose one, even with experience of knowing him, because he was careful and he was pointing out to me and telling me things which I had to know, and had to know fast. For instance, I remember, it was only about a fortnight later, I was out on patrol and I heard this weird noise that I'd never heard anything like it before. And I said, good grief, what's that? He says, oh, that's a moaning mini, Nebelwerfer. And I heard the clump of about six explosions, you know. And it was things like that. He'd say, no, that's a Spando. And I says, well, Dice, it's an MG-42. I didn't know what a Spando was. That was the thing I think they could have taught us at the School of Infantry, the sound of enemy weapons. Because
but they didn't.
No, they didn't. A later experience, about 2 months later, in fact, it was a month later, I acquired a Smizer, that's an MG-34 machine pistol, and I opened up with it. And a messenger came from B Company, because I was with A Company. B Company commander was asking, would the man who's got the Smizer please fire single shots, because B Company thinks they have been surrounded. Are you with me? He says, well, these shots, at the very the sounds of battle, these different sounds, you can determine more or less where a shell's going to go. And I've always thought that when a bomb or a shell approaches, people seem to say that it comes down the scale. You know, it whistles. It doesn't. It goes, and then it goes bang. That one's close. And of course, there's the swish swish of the mortar as the mortar bomb comes down. I mean, I've had one a yard away from my head explode, but my house below the ground, you see. And I could hear it. Another friend of mine, another comrade, a mortar bomb, he was sitting cross-legged in a slip trench, and the mortar bomb fell right between his legs, but it didn't go off.
So what you're saying is, of course, you recognise weapons and missiles by the sounds.
Yes.
But it's something you had to learn.
You had to learn that, yes. And I learned that in action. Now, another occasion with Umpleby, we were moving in, we had crossed the River Tringnor, because that was our main hobby at the time. The lads had just crossed the Biffer Moor, then we crossed the Tringnor, and we'd had a battle there, and there was a tank knocked out and a young German officer hanging over the edge with his Luger in his hand. And I said, oh, there's a keepsake for me, I'll get the Luger. And Umpleby said, steady on, Corporal, he said. There's a lot of lads in the battalion walk past that. And it was booby-trapped. You see, so the old soldier, you've got to listen to them. They've got a lot to tell you. And if you have been to School of Infantry and you know it all, you suddenly realise there's some things you don't know.
So coming to a section as you did, straight out from England, the initial recognition is your stripes, not the man.
That's it. Yeah. Mind, I've always practised, even in civilian life, since I left the army. I was taught this by a sergeant who I recognised as one of the best sergeants in the battalion. And a young sergeant said to me, choose who you think is the best sergeant and try and emulate him. Well, it was a chap called Pedler Palmer. and I'll follow Pedlar. No, Pedlar would never ask you to do something that he couldn't show you. He would, don't tell them, show them. And I always practice that.
You must have had the members of the section really looking at you and watching you those first
yes,
days.
Yes, yes, you did. One particular patrol I went on, we were approaching a farmhouse in the dark, and there'd been some shots to the right. In fact, there was two lads killed that night. And as I approached, I think there was awareness of them, but I went straight forward and into an outhouse, and I cleared it out because it frightened the wits out of me. A pea ground passed me. And after that, I said, you know, just like, take a position on the side of the farmhouse. And whilst we were there, we were close to a railway, and we were lying on one side of the battery on which the railway travelled, and we heard someone running over the other side and panting very, very heavily. I somehow suspect that was a German, but we left him to his... We left him to get his stuff and get away. And we came back off that patrol, and as we moved across the river and to the right of a white tape which had been put out by the engineers, a voice said to me, "You're on the wrong side of the tape, lad. Get at this side." Of course, the engineers had cleared the track, you see, so minefield, obviously.
Can we come back to those early days again? You've just joined this section. Did yes. the section have a number or a name? Or?
No, we were in A platoon. We'd either be number one section, number two section, number three section, or headquarters section.
So, who was your platoon commander?
A sergeant at the time.
Do you remember his name?
Sergeant Morgan.
What was he like?
Morgan the Mighty. He was a big, strong, determined, fair-minded man. I took a shine to him straight away. He was a good soldier, and he'd been around. But we had some good, as I said, the line of fusiliers. I couldn't have joined a better battalion.
Right, there was yourself and this Lance Corporal you've named, who was your
yes.
Lance Corporal.
Yes.
Do you remember the names of the other men who were in your section at that time?
Dryden, Curzon, for a time Barlow, Ginger Phillips, and Bill Twine.
And what were they like as a group?
Well, they were from different parts of the country. Some had been in action from Africa through Sicily. But, you know, come the end of the war, I think the battalion had nearly over 2,500 men through the battalion. So there'd been a lot of changes.
They say that in every section of platoon, there's a man at the front who's eager and leads, there's a man at the back who's very reluctant, and the rest in the middle follow. Did you have this kind of situation in your own section? Did you have a man amongst them who you know you'd had to keep an eye on to keep going, whilst others would go up quite easily?
Well, I think most of the lads were very resolute. As I said, the training I had in England had stood me in very good stead when I got into battle. The noises around me. But it was first learning and discerning which was ours and which was friendly fire. I'd had experience of friendly fire in England, by the way, when some of my mates got killed. But we'd gone into one battle, and when we came out, there was a very small officer, a lieutenant, who had already had the MC, and he greeted every one of us coming back off the patrol. And he said, "I'm your platoon commander." He says, "I've just come back from hospital."
What was his name?
Horrocks. Good name, Horrocks, isn't it? Yes, Happy Horrocks.
And did you have him long? Did he command you for any length of time?
No, I don't know what happened to him. He just disappeared. And then...
So, in effect, what you're saying is that the section that you took over certainly didn't have any possible problems of members who would find it difficult to go into action.
No, I don't think so. No, I think they're all pretty resolute. They knew what they had to do. They didn't want to be, most of them didn't want to be there, but we had a job to do, and that was it.